Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Kruman are interviewing Mildred Menlo on December 1st, 1976. Tape number 2, side number 3.
Tell us something. When were you married to Pat?
We were married in... I met Pat in 1938. In November, we were married in 1939, in March.
November of 39.
Married in March of 39.
Oh, you met in November?
Yes.
He went to New York then?
He went to New York, and he checked in at a hotel. And the next day, he came out to meet my family. It so happened that my mother and father were going to a wedding that day, and, you know, didn't stay very long to meet him. But my grandmother had come over, my paternal grandmother had come over to the house because she wanted to know how everybody was in Scranton, my trip and all that. And then he started calling, coming in weekends, and of course I had said, you know, I wasn't interested in it. But he got his divorce shortly thereafter.
Did he have any children by that marriage?
No.
No. Did you, where did you all live after you were married? In New York?
No, we went to live in McKeesport. And my husband was the pathologist, the medical director of McKeesport Hospital.
Oh, now, when you met him, he was already through
school. He was a pathologist. Oh, yes, he was a pathologist.
And so, medical director, you say, of the hospital?
So, immediately he got that job, and then you came after you were married here, or he was here
first?
No,
he was established there. Yes, don't forget, he had been married previously.
Oh, I see. So when he went to Scranton to visit, he was originally from...
He was born and raised in McKeesport.
All right. Now, so your children were born in McKeesport?
My husband was an only child.
No, but your children?
I have one. He was born in McKeesport.
All right.
What is his name?
Michael Adam Menlo.
And he's married?
No.
He lives in New York. No, he's in England, isn't he?
Aberdeen, Scotland.
Mm. How old is he?
Mike is 33. Gosh.
And what does he do there?
He is a lecturer in moral philosophy.
At the university there?
University of Aberdeen.
Philosophy?
Mm-hmm. Moral philosophy.
Where was he educated?
His elementary school was White Oak School. He went to Mercersburg, Cornell, Pitt. He graduated Pitt as Marshall, summa cum laude. He was a member of Phi Beta Kappa, and he was a Woodrow Wilson scholar. And then he went to Oxford and got a degree in philosophy and English literature at Oxford.
A PhD, his whatever it is?
No, he doesn't have a PhD.
A degree in what did you say?
Literature.
Degree in?
And philosophy. Literature.
Literature and philosophy. Mm-hmm. But you lived all the time you were married in
all our
McKeesport.
Married life, he lived in McKeesport.
And when did your husband pass away?
My husband died in December of 1958.
Was he ill?
Yes. He had infectious hepatitis.
Mm. You think that was did it anything to do with his work?
Yes. We feel confident that he must have posted somebody had had it. For years he had had these spells of violent temperatures and all that, acted almost like a malaria. But by the time they were able to know exactly what it was, it had involved the liver. And we flew him by air ambulance to New York. He was at Harkness Pavilion for 3 months. And came through the surgery beautifully, but the liver did not turn over. And that was it. Liver would not function.
Your married life, you tell us anything about your social life or your family vacations or the hobbies you may have had together?
Well, we played golf. When Mike was little, we used to go to Florida for the month of March so that Pat could play golf and relax. He loved the ocean. And then our traveling was in this country for the most part because Mike was, we felt, was too young to take away and he would not leave him. So it was a question of going to areas, south, north, Canada, Williamsburg, you know, places of this, of interest that we could take Mike. We loved music, theater. We would go up to New York and leave Mike with my family and go and stay at a hotel and go to theater. Now, my husband was a musician, too. It's a sideline. He used to play a trumpet, and he played professionally. When he went to college, he was 16. When he went to the University of Pennsylvania. And on weekends, he used to play the trumpet professionally. We used to come in to the symphony concerts on Friday night, you know, in the days of Klemperer when it wasn't anything. Richard Park was a very dear friend of ours, and we were a part of the group that was interested in seeing the establishment of the opera. I still go to the symphony Friday night, the operas, the Y concerts, anything to do with music. I like good theater. My idea of a good time is to go to New York for 4 or 5 days and, you know, get in opera theater, whatever I can. We had a small closed group. We were very friendly with in the Keysport.
Who were some of those friends?
The Hirschbergs, Gary and Sam Hirschberg, Buffy and Herb Kaplan, Evelyn and Al Greenberg. Was the core of the group. Alice and Alan Safier. Rowan Sam Weiss. This was the men, there were eight of them. They used to have a...
Rice, did you say?
You know,
Rice. Weiss, what did you say?
Weiss.
Weiss, yeah.
Can you tell us about the Jewish community in McKeesport a little bit?
Yeah.
In that time.
The Jewish community in McKeesport, basically, for the most part, were Hungarian Jews. They were a very, very strong group there. You know, somebody had always brought somebody else over.
Was your husband Hungarian?
Yes.
Background?
Yes, we both were. People were small business people, for the most part, who had come there early and had done well. Really done very well.
What about your religious affiliation in the case?
Our religious affiliation is an interesting one. My husband, while a deeply religious man, had no regard for the trappings of religion. And he would not go to the Orthodox synagogue with his parents. He was a member of the Reformed Temple. I'm still a member of the temple in McKeesport.
What's the name of that?
B'nai Israel. Now, when I first went there, you know, organization-wise, you became a part of everything. I was 11. I was president of Young Judea in Scranton. That was my first official connection. Then I went into Junior Hadassah, and then Senior Hadassah. While I was a member of most organizations, my sister, but Hadassah became the prime mover in my life. When I came to McKeesport, I became active in the sisterhood.
Of the Reformed Temple.
What's that?
Of the Reformed Temple.
Of the Reformed Temple, yes. Still a member of the sisterhood there. I became active in Hadassah. I became active in the Women's Auxiliary at the hospital. And I helped establish a branch of the League of Women Voters in spring, in the McKeesport.
The neighborhood in McKeesport, I'm sure you can tell us that it's changed, or you haven't been back for a while.
Oh, yes, I go back. See, when I first went to McKeesport to live, my husband had a house there. My mother-in-law had a mortgage on this house. And the people, you know, just moved out. They couldn't do anything with it. So they took this house and redid it to make it livable. But after we were married, it was just an area that was going down. I didn't want it. And we bought lot in what was becoming a development, the White Oak Borough, just outside of McKeesport.
All right, now tell me, was your husband
Yeah, he was. When he first came out of medical school and had his internship and his residency, he went into general practice in McKeesport. He practiced for a year and a half and threw up his hands. Mm-hmm. You see, when from the time he was 16, he knew he was going into medicine. He used to go to the Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago during the summer as a volunteer in the lab. He only loved laboratory medicine. Okay.
So how many years before you married him was he associated with the McKeesport Hospital?
Probably 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm.
So you got this lot in White Oak?
Yes. But because of the war, we couldn't build. So it was 1949 before we were able to build and move into the house.
And then you lived where between that time? You were
we
married in 38.
We still lived in this house that we had.
Oh, the one that the...
There was no place to
I
go.
See.
Mm-hmm. Just kept pouring money into an old house that was going down the drain. Mm-hmm.
And something about McKeesport. Any of the changes that have been made there?
Very many, many serious changes. You see what happened to McKeesport. McKeesport was a thriving small community. And on Saturday night, you couldn't walk through the streets because the people from all of the neighboring little towns came down. You went down from one end of Fifth Avenue to the other, and there were all kinds of shops, stores, all grades. And then came the shopping malls.
Now,
a very important thing that happened in McKeesport was the fact that the B&O Railroad cut across Fifth Avenue in the main section of town for years. People would come into town, and especially during the war years, when those freights rolled, there was no way you could get through town.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to go across the Duquesne Bridge, the other side of the river, and all the way around. there was no way to get through because it intersected the main central part of the shopping area. And it became a very discouraging thing for many people. And when they started to build the malls, that was the end of McKeesport as a thriving community. Then the redevelopment area came in, and they have made a mall out of part of it. They have rebuilt it, but as a shopping area, it has, I don't think it will ever.
No.
Strikes, National Tube Company layoffs, removal of certain areas of business from the area. It's no longer. It was the most successful small community you could dream of. You know Marty Morrow,
mm-hmm.
who has Hardy and Haven, mm-hmm. got his start in McKeesport in the little jewelry store.
Do you have any, or have you had any impact or involvement in the, during the war in politics or anything or during the wartime years, the Second World War?
During Second World War.
Was your husband involved in service or anything?
No, my husband was on the staff of, I don't know just how to describe it, it was a highly secret thing. Bettis Airport had an atomic division. And he was the pathologist assigned. You know, they still didn't know what the atomic thing was. And he was there once a week. Now, what the details were, what was done, I never knew. It was top secret. But he had clearance at the Bettis plant.
During your married years, did you work other than volunteer work? No. How did you get involved in Israel Bonds, and how did you get started in
very
your endeavor here?
I was very active in Hadassah. See, I did a lot of speaking, a lot of organization work, and I became involved in Hadassah region-wise. I was the president of the Western Pennsylvania region of Hadassah. I did a tremendous amount of speaking. So I had to be involved in the political issues of the day, in the issues concerning Israel, local politics, everything, you name it, I was involved in it. I became very friendly with some of the top women leaders in Pittsburgh because of what I was doing in Hadassah, because
such a, who were some of these women?
Sarah Munter, Ruth Carlin, Sarah Gladstone. You know, these were people who were in the top echelon
mm-hmm.
of the Hadassah group, which was where my main thrust always was. Doris Benstock. After my husband died, his mother survived. He was an only child. Mike was already in prep school. And I could not walk out on her. So I decided, she had decided to go to the home before my husband died. She could not, after my father-in-law died, it was a very serious problem with her. She was a woman who had always been in business. She was not a homemaker. Neither cooking nor anything of that sort interested her. She had always been a businesswoman. She spoke 5 languages and used to serve as an interpreter. When Frank Kaplan was practicing law, in McKeesport. She used to serve as an interpreter for him. She was a very knowledgeable woman, but very difficult, almost just oppressively difficult. She could not live alone. She would not live alone. We could not get anybody to stay with her. And my husband would not permit her to come to live with us because it would have destroyed all of us. She was a destructive individual. When he first became ill, I had suggested that I get him away to Florida for about 10 days and over the Easter holidays, and it was Pesach. And I was used to make Pesach for her. So I was told if a home takes people over the Pesach holiday, you know, just for short periods of time, she agreed to do it. And she had such a good time, you know, telling everybody who she was and what she did, that she said if she could get in there on a permanent basis, she would give up her home. And she did. And it was the luckiest thing that ever happened to me. So I decided it would be easier for me if I lived in Pittsburgh. And Mike said that if I was going to stay in the house, he would come home. And education was the most important thing as far as my husband and I were concerned. And I said, very well, I'll sell the house and I'll take an apartment in Pittsburgh.
What year was that about?
That was in 1959. Pat died in 59. If she had not been here, I am not so sure that I would have stayed on here because my whole family was in the East. I had nobody here.
But he came to Pitt then? Mike?
No. He was at Mercersburg at that time. Then from Mercersburg, he went to Cornell.
Oh, but he came to live with you in Pittsburgh while he was in school then? He lived at... No,
he said if she wanted, he would come to the house.
He said that if I didn't, if I wanted to stay in the house, he would come back and go to school in McKeesport, which I did not want because, the elementary school he was in was a top school. I was not happy with the McKeesport High School, and I did not want him to go to school there.
So now you were involved with these ladies in Hadassah.
Right. When I came to Pittsburgh to live, Sidney Munter said to me, what do you want to do? You're not going to play cards three times or four times a week. What are you going to do? He says, if you listen to me, Mildred, go to work. And I said, Sidney, just give me a chance to get myself together. I was here about 2 or 3 months when Sarah Munter came to me and she said, look, the gal who was the women's division director of Bonds told me yesterday that she is going to be married and she's moving to Philadelphia.
Who was that?
Remember? Wait, it'll come to me in a minute. Her name is Friedman now. She used to live in Irwin originally. Her husband was a doctor. We'll come to that. And she said, I think that would be a great spot for you to help out until they can really get somebody. It's a crazy kind of a setup. Somebody else that I knew had applied for the job. And when I heard that she had applied for the job, I wouldn't. But Doris and Ruth and Sarah were on my back. So
Doris Binstock has been involved in it that long?
Yes, you see, Doris was the chairman at that time. Doris was the chairman 17 years ago.
Oh, she did mention that.
And she became pregnant.
That's with Ellen, yes.
With Ellen. And they insisted that I go down to see Gus Biskier for an interview.
Who was he?
He was the manager of Pittsburgh at the time.
What was his name again?
Gus Biskier, B-I-S-G-Y-E-R. And I said, look, I'm getting ready to go up to New York to spend a few days with my mother. Well, I did. I went in for the interview, and then their New York office called me at my mother's while I was there and asked me to come in there for an interview. And they asked me to take the job on a temporary basis until they could get somebody.
And that temporary job has lasted
17 years. As a matter of fact, I had a note from Ruth Carl the other day. She needed some information.
Where is she now?
She lives in California. And she said to me, what I did to you.
All right. Can you tell us something about the work that's involved so it'll go down? The people that don't know will know exactly what you do. Because we know so well, but we want it on tape.
Very interesting thing. When I went in there, of course, this was something. After all, these are things that I had done on a voluntary basis all of my life. I'd been involved organization-wise, forming committees and so on. I walked into the office they showed me, and there were two telephones on the desk. There was a switchboard and a telephone with the switchboard, and then there was a direct line. And I said, what do I need two telephones? And I often think about that peculiar question. Bonds is a concept that the whole Jewish community has not accepted as yet.
After how many years has that been?
Since 51. But it was a concept that I have always understood because of my early training with my grandfather and my father, that the most important kind of help to give anybody is the kind of help to help them help themselves. I mean, this is the basic kind of charity that they were aware of. It was always a creative kind, not merely doling out. They were never of the opinion that there had to be anything but a measure of dignity with giving. I remember just one thing I want to point out. When I was a child, at Purim, one of the things that you did was you took shalach monas from one home to the other. Are you aware of that? Mm-hmm. All right.
What does that word mean?
Shalach monas
is
a gift of goodies, you know, things that you give. You're sharing something that you do. Now, for 2 weeks before Purim, Molly, who was my grandfather's cook at that time, my grandmother's, she was alive, my earliest record, used to bake. And I will never forget, there was a living room and a sitting room, two very large rooms, and they're all marble-top tables. And in those months, the marble would keep cold, you know, the heat was turned down in the room. And these cakes were put on trays and platters on these marble tops. My grandfather would go to Leonard's hardware store and would buy maybe two or three dozen of white china plates. Then he would go to the wholesale area and buy white linen napkins, because my grandparents felt that if you were giving somebody something, you did it graciously and gracefully. And those china plates were given with this food and the fresh linen napkin over. I used to take it, my brother and I used to deliver it to these various families. Now, at that time, it was customary to give the person who brought something, the children did it, a penny for bringing this. And we went all over. But the most important thing that stayed with me was not the different kind of cakes, which were fantastic, but that Grandpa insisted that it be a new china plate that they could have as a lovely cake plate and the white linen napkin. And when we got the pennies, in the dining room of their home was a wardrobe, and on the door were the pushkies. And every Friday night, if I was there for dinner, we went down the line putting them in. Those pennies had to be put in the pushkies, you see. So that I was aware always that there had to be a dignity about the way you help people. And when I became interested in bonds, when I still lived in Keysport, I realized that the ability to help these people develop their own economy, their own businesses, to be able to expand it in such a way that they could draw in and train people who had never had the opportunities, was the most important and creative thing I could possibly do. It wasn't that I was opposed, you know, to $3 a giving. No, you have to do that where that's necessary. But this, to me, was to be the backbone of the progress of the state.
I know how hard you've worked for Israel Bonds all these years, and
this was it.
No. You feel it's your job. I know that, but you really underneath it all seem to have that
dedication. It's a
dedication.
It is. It's a feeling. You see, it's a personal commitment. It is not a job, because I always feel that I haven't done enough in conveying the importance of this to people, in sharing the building of the state in this manner. Now, I realized that you reach more men through women than anything under the sun. Now, when I first came with Bonds, my work was only with the women. But I realized you could get to the women just